I'd like for us all to imagine that we are in a very large, very dark movie theater and are about to watch an ancient epic of the silver screen unfold. And out of the darkness, these words begin. In the 15th year of the reign of Emperor Tiberius. And there is the ultimate wide-angle shot from space of the all-encompassing Roman Empire. Over all of the known world with Rome at its center. And the incredibly wide shot now begins to zoom in and we pull into the Mediterranean and start to move down the boot over Greece, along the water, above Cyprus to the shores of Judea. And even though we are far from Rome, in Judea we pull in tighter. At this distance, the military garrisons are easy enough to recognize. And were we close enough, we would also be able to see in the details that every road has ruts of the exact same width so as to carry a Roman chariot of war, and that many religions are practiced in the empire as long as they recognize the Caesar on their coins. Closer, the shot pulls in down through Judea, and now we can make out the area of the Galilee. And soon we sweep in just a few hundred feet above the ground to circle the blinding glory of the great temple of Jerusalem. But curiously, our shot does not end there with the marble and the gold. It continues, drawing closer to the ground, but away from the temple, away from the garrison, down the mount, now across the brush and the desert, out into the wilderness. Coming closer and closer, and now out of the brush we see a scraggly river. And now we hear a voice that cries out in the wilderness. Prepare the way of the Lord, this voice cries. Make his path straight. From the power and the might of the empire to repentance and forgiveness in the wilderness. This is how our story this morning begins in this chapter of the Good News according to Luke. From Rome, the seat of military and cultural power, through the temple in Jerusalem, the place of religious power for the early listeners of this gospel, to a prophet in the wilderness by a small river. Given that the first two chapters of Luke's gospel begin with unpredictable pregnancies and babes swaddled in a manger, what is the writer of this gospel doing by starting this next chapter in this way? For one thing, when we look at the records of the time, some of the dates of these leaders do not necessarily correspond with one another, and overall, it is hard to pin down the exact date of when this John began his time in the wilderness. Our modern standards demand exactness. And to be sure, there are some who use this discrepancy to claim that since these facts might not line up, that this narrative should be discounted. Except that the writer of this gospel had an entirely different intention in mind. You see, Luke is telling us a story and using the framing of it to begin the tale. For listeners of the gospel in the first century, this was expected. It was a common convention of Greco-Roman historiography to give an account of what was in existence at the time, to set the scene, as it were, for the story to follow. So what if this beginning, this listing of the seven political and religious leaders, is being used to tell us what the arc of the whole story is bending towards? Where is this pointing? Maybe one of the prophets can help point the way. Because as Dan Jocelyn C. Matowski taught us this past Wednesday in our Advent series, the ancient prophets often pointed the way to corporate redemption, a time when anyone and everyone, all flesh, was in right relationship with one another and therefore with God. This is where the imagery from Isaiah, quoted by John the Baptizer in this gospel, and reimagined in our first reading from the book of Baruch, is helpful. In it we hear that valleys will be raised up, the hills and the mountains laid low, the crooked paths straightened, and the rough ways made smooth. Besides sounding like an absolutely disastrous project by the Army Corps of Engineers, what does this imagery mean for us? Well, the ancient Israelites in exile, for whom this image was written, had been forcibly removed from their homeland and relocated to a foreign land. Their way had been rough, full of nearly impassable mountains and deeply trying valleys. They knew all too well the pain of the crooked path and the roughness of the way. For them, this prophecy from Isaiah echoed in Baruch was the sweet nectar of good news. It was a declaration that on the road to salvation, we are meant to travel easily and lightly, our obstacles removed from before us, like the hills laid low and the valleys raised up. This is what it means to be a people in right relationship with our God, that our redemption comes when the paths are made level for all. And now I realize it is often very tempting to focus on just our own personal behavior when reading passages like this. Just me and Jesus, for instance. And we do need to make sure that we personally are right with our God. But just hold on to that for one more week, because next week's gospel is an extension of this passage. And in it, John the Baptist speaks directly to what we might do as individuals on our way to salvation. But this week, I would like to keep our attention on the corporate, the whole body, on our road to redemption. When talking about communities being in right relationship with one another and with God, it is hard to not think of the events and decisions of this past week that are still ongoing. If the duty of a preacher is to preach with the Bible in one hand and the newspaper in the other, to paraphrase the great theologian Karl Barth, then we cannot avoid what confronts us day by day. Where would John the Baptizer be calling for repentance and forgiveness? In the wilderness of which empire would he be proclaiming? Where would that long tracking shot find its focus? A couple of months ago, I preached about the decision that this country faces in regards to the crisis of how health care is offered. And the debate rages on. The United States Senate met yesterday even to continue the deliberation on amendments for a bill that is inspiring and daunting in its scale. The questions over cost and requirement and coverage remain. There are thorny issues that are more likely to get intense and divisive as these weeks go on. Ironically, as we approach a birth story that took place in animal stalls because there was no room for them in the inn. The questions that must focus our participation in the process are this. On our communal road to redemption, what obstacles keep some from level ground? What actions in regard to healthcare reform must we take so as to make the crooked paths straight, the mountains passable, the valleys crossable for all? And earlier this week, President Obama outlined his plan for the next chapter in the long, arduous, and painful war that we have been waging in Afghanistan for 8 years. The plan, which includes an increase of 30,000 more troops to disrupt and deny safe haven to the Taliban and elements of Al-Qaeda, has been designed so that we start the end of our participation in this war within 18 months. It is expected to roughly cost, and this number is merely in financial terms, $1 million per troop per year, somewhere around $30 billion per year. Now, I myself do not know how one puts a cost on the lives lost and the lives damaged. But this must be central to our calculations. But back to simply the financial cost. When one plan that involved a much longer U.S. participation in this war was suggested, President Obama is to have said, "This is a 10-year, trillion-dollar effort and does not match up with our interests." Does not match up with our interests. This, for us as believers of that voice that cries out in the wilderness, this is the very crux of our discernment. What matches up with our interests? I recently read an op-ed piece in the Chronicle in which the writer states that even though the decision for deeper participation in the war was a decision articulated by one person, she realized that it's not the president, it's the culture of our state. The truth in this statement reflects the truth that the prophets knew, that we are all bound up together, one to another, that all flesh shall see the salvation of God, and that though it may be one man that makes this decision, it will be an entire society that bears the responsibility. Again, I full well know that this does not come with an easy answer. But I also know that it must meet this most challenging question. How are we, the people of this nation, making the crooked paths straight, the mountains passable, the valleys crossable for all? Can this war make it possible? And last, but not least, certainly not in the category of the previous two questions, but one more question, this close to our spiritual home. As a parish community, we have been afforded the opportunity to purchase the property on the corner of Oxford and Cedar. Believe it or not, the same question applies. Because as many others at All Souls have said, we do not seek to buy property just to own it. That is not why we exist. If we do choose to purchase it, this property must help us participate in the redemptive work of Jesus Christ in this world, nothing less. Now, that could happen in many ways, but always to this question: how will All Souls owning this property make the crooked paths straight, the mountains passable, and the valleys crossable for all? In the midst of the oppression of an empire, after decades of violent revolt had left these occupiers with little patience for armed revolt, our story this morning pulls its focus to the passionate son of Zechariah and Elizabeth, proclaiming the words of the ancient prophets, "Proclaim the way of the Lord, make his paths straight." Our story shows us that those who abuse power and might have been at odds with the salvation, the redemption of the people of God for generations. And that this road to redemption demands our participation to make the crooked path straight, the mountains passable, and the valleys crossable for all. And that even for the chosen, for John, for Jesus, for many others, this road we will walk will not be without consequence. But our good news assures us that if we travel this road of Advent towards the color of the sky just before the breaking of the dawn, the most unlikely of outcomes is possible.